The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, special music guest Alex Ryder. I also talk Dave Grohl, Sound City soundtrack, This Week in Music History, the NBA, top movies, and the conclusion to the Randy Blythe trial. All this and more on Revelator. Welcome to the first show of Revelator here on OMNES.TV. That's Omnis.TV. I'm your host, Ryan. And oh, baby, have I got a show for you this evening. The lovely, talented Alex Ryder will be stopping by a little later, so definitely stick around for that. Definitely a must listen. A full show on the docket. And if you know me and you know the past 76 shows under the current or the former title, I should say, Unsigned, you know that I always take an opportunity to pick fun and poke fun at good old Justin Bieber, as I call him, or Justin Bieber, as some of you know, or Bieber, or the Bieber Fever, or whatever you want to call him. Well, he just recently had a birthday, and it led me to this song right here. Justin Bieber turned 19 years old the other day, and he ended his big day with a depressing tweet. Oh, it's poor little Bieber. After a confrontation ended his birthday celebration, an eyewitness at E! News, Bieber said, in, you know, he held a circus-themed bash at London's Cirque du Soleil on March 1st that was cut short. Now, a guest, Ellen Page, Robert Clark, and as well as Jaden Smith, they were asked to leave after an argument occurred between Justin Bieber's entourage and club security. So, as you know, this birthday song here, happy birthday. You're still Justin Bieber.
It's your birthday, and hey, let's face it, you're dumb.
Moving on tonight, another music news. Stone Temple Pilots fire Scott Weiland this past week from the band. In a statement, Scott Weiland said, I learned from my supposed termination from Stone Temple Pilots this morning by reading about it in the press. Not sure how I could be terminated from a band I founded, fronted, and co-wrote many of its biggest hits, but that's something for the lawyers to figure out. In the meantime, I'm looking forward to seeing all of my fans on my solo tour, which starts this past Friday. Scott Weiland on his departure of Stone Temple Pilots. You want to talk about dysfunctional band. These guys have been a dysfunctional band for probably at least a dozen years or more. I'm interested to see. I like how he threw the lawyer bit out there. We'll see. Anytime you get lawyers involved, I imagine that's going to be a sticky situation. So don't expect any new STP material anytime soon. Here's an interesting story I came across. This is an interesting side project in the works. Pearl Jam's Mike McCready and former Guns N' Roses bassist Duff McKagan have formed, I hate the word supergroup, but I guess we'll use supergroup here, with former Screaming Trees drummer Barrett Martin. Now, the new group is currently unnamed at this time. The band is looking to tap multiple vocalists to help flesh out ideas old and new. Duff and Barrett, McCready said, when we got together, we wrote some new stuff, and we look at some of the old Mad Season demos that we had unreleased from the second album, Disinformation. And I says, you know, we're trying to figure out what to do with those. McCready told Billboard, we're talking with Chaz Coleman from Killing Joke, and I've been working with other singers as well to put some stuff together. So that sounds like an interesting project. Again, still untitled, still obviously in developmental stage. And once we hear some information about that, we'll definitely come and broadcast it to you here on Revelator. Now here, Dave Grohl, you know what? Dave Grohl quits, it puts on Foo Fighters on hiatus, and the guy is more busy than he's probably been in years. Dave Grohl is everywhere. Of course, he just recently did a documentary of Sound City. He just recently released the Sound City soundtrack streaming in full. Say that a couple of times, Faust. Sound City soundtrack. How much soundtrack could a Sound City track if a Sound City could track a city? Right? Consisting of experimental collaborations of musicians such as Paul McCartney, Trent Reznor, Corey Taylor, Taylor Hawkins, Stevie Nicks, Joshua Holmes from Queens of Stone Age, Brad Wilk from Rage Against the Machine, to name a few, is the album is actually set to be released March 12th, but you can go and actually hear the full stream, Dave Grohl's Sound City, reel-to-reel soundtrack streaming in full. I listened to it last night while doing some of the show notes. Really, really good stuff. What can you say? I mean, you know, the list, you know, Paul McCartney, Trent Reznor, Corey Taylor, you know, Stevie Nicks, Josh Holmes from Queens of Stone Age. The list goes on and on and on. So really, really great stuff by Dave Grohl working with the who's who of rock and roll. Yeah, you can't really beat that. Now, moving on, this is a story we've been covering for quite some time now, and it looks like it's finally come to a conclusion. That is, and of course, I'm talking about the Lamb of God singer Randy Blythe. The trials comes to an end today. Panel in Chechnya found, they've ruled that basically he's not guilty. Now, he has been acquitted of manslaughter. The frontman, again, of Lamb of God, Randy Blythe, was largely blamed the death of nearly of a fan 3 years ago at a concert. Now, the state attorney was trying to obviously get a minimum sentence of 5 years for the manslaughter. There was obviously, you know, everyone who was close to this, and we followed the story quite a bit. I'm going to spend a whole lot of time on it, but I'm glad to see that he's acquitted and justice really was served here. And to Randy Blythe's credit, he did everything you possibly and did the right thing you could do in that situation. He could have easily hid in the United States and let this thing go, you know, helping, I guess, the family get a little bit of closure here. And it looks like the family is going to have to pursue the promoters and the venue for the incident for not really, you know, protecting the stage and the crowd as well as they should have. And kind of a sad story. You know, you talk about, you know, it's nice for Randy Blythe getting off, but, you know, that family's still obviously dealing with the loss of their 19-year-old son, even 3 years later. So at least they get a little bit of a closure in this situation, and Randy will come back to the United States. And, you know, credit to him again for, you know, not running away when he easily could have, and going over there and standing trial, spending, you know, months and months in prison, and didn't complain about it, and really took it on the chin and did the right thing about it. So credit to him about that. THR is reporting that according to the two high-level industry sources in NBC, they will announce in May that Jimmy Fallon will be replacing Jay Leno in 2014. Well, the network still denies the rumor, categorically untrue, as they said, per NBC. But look, NBC is fifth in the ratings for nighttime at an 11:30 Eastern slot with Jimmy Kimmel and Conan O'Brien and all those others. Remember when Jay Leno quit and Conan O'Brien was doing the Tonight Show? Be careful, Jimmy Fallon. That's all I'm going to say. Maybe this time it's true. I don't know. But now it's time for our new segment we call This Week in Music History. March 4th, 1966, John Lennon says, "We, the Beatles, are more popular than Jesus." Bold statement. March 5th, 1807, the first performance of Ludwig von Beethoven's Fourth Symphony in B was performed. In 1907, on March 5th, the very first radio broadcast of musical composition was aired. Also on March 5th, 1963, Patsy Cline, country music singer, died in a plane crash at the age of 30. March 8th, 1971, Radio Hanio broadcast Jimi Hendrix's Star Spangled Banner. March 9th, 1997, notorious B.I.G. rapper Biggie Smalls was shot and killed in Los Angeles at the age of 24. And March 10th, Carrie Underwood and Edie Brickell are celebrating birthdays. I bet you some of you thought I was going to. I'm hitting it. Happy birthday, Carrie Underwood and Edie Brickell.
It's your birthday, and you're still stupid. You're just.
Okay, moving on tonight. Stripper pole money drop. This guy named Jesus Mata, I tell you what, this guy takes the cake, or at least I guess he just takes his money to the strip bar. 21-year-old from Texas recently received a tax refund that he spent all of it, a whole $1,000 at the strip bar in Texas. Way to go, buddy. Way to go. Now, it doesn't stop there. He doesn't like he just spent $1,000 and that's the story. No. This guy is so embarrassed about spending it, dropping $1,000 at the strip bar, that he's afraid to go home to his wife. And he will. Yeah. Hey, no kidding, right? So he's like, I can't go home and tell my wife that I was, you know, helping. She needed help getting through school. That's what it was. I guarantee that excuse is not going to work. So what's he do? What any right-thinking individual does, and that's falsify a police report. He goes to the Texas Police State Department, the state troopers there, and says that six gunmen and two trucks robbed him at gunpoint with assault rifles and took his $1,000. Now, later, after being questioned again about it, he later admitted that he had made up the story to hide the fact that he blew a whole $1,000 at the strip bar. I mean, wow. Really, man? You drop $1,000 at a strip bar. You want to talk about being taken. I mean, I will not confirm the money that I've spent in the strip bar in my lifetime. I'm just not going to do it. But I know it hasn't been $1,000 at one time, okay? I mean, there's a time you're going to strip bar and having a good time, and there's just going to strip bar and being completely stupid and dropping $1,000 when that's all you have. Okay. I mean, if you're going to go spend $1,000 on strippers, you better get something. There better be something awesome going on in the champagne room. That's all I'm going to say. And I'm not talking about just a snail trail on your street either. Okay. Now, I mean, yeah, he's going to be charged with falsifying a report. No word on whether or not what's going to happen, when he tells his wife that he spent $1,000 on lap dances in Crown Royal. Now, you want to talk about rolling back prices? This is a story for the ages here, and it's a Walmart story, and I always enjoy these. And we had a little fun talking with Alex Ryder, who will be joining us here shortly, about, you know, just interesting people at Walmart. And this one I found very, very interesting. 61-year-old Mary Frances. She, goes to Walmart. She's got her internet coupon, right? And she was extremely upset when the assistant manager told her that retail coupons, the retail store does not accept online coupons. She was trying to save a dollar, by the way, on this coupon. After the coupon was rejected, Mary Frances allegedly called the Walmart assistant manager a bitch and other foul names and intentionally struck her with her shopping cart. Now, Mary Frances was escorted out of the store, and she said, and I quote, "If you follow me, I have something for you in my car," Mary Frances warned. As several Walmart employees watched from the store entrance, Mary Frances appeared outside of her car waving a gun in its holster. Reported investigators said at that point, Mary removed the gun, which is a loaded Smith & Wesson 38 Special, from its holster and pointed at the store employees and said, "I've got something for y'all." I imagine that's how she sounded. I don't know. "I got something for y'all." And the Walmart workers retreated, obviously, back into the store in fear of their lives because this crazy lady is waving a 38 Smith & Wesson Special at them. So at that point, it gets better. Trust me. So Mary Frances decides, you know, she's had enough of Walmart. She didn't save her dollar on her coupon. She's mad. She's waving a gun around. She jumps in her 2011 Ford Escape. Keyword there, escape, by the way. She's fleeing, escaping. Get that, how that works? And at that point, she ends up getting pulled over by a sheriff deputy who asked if she had a firearm in her SUV. She said, "Yes, I have a concealed weapons permit, and you're not taking my gun." Asked about the gun's location, she said, "You're not taking my gun." Asked twice to remove herself from the vehicle, she refused and was tased and removed from the vehicle. Mind you, Mary Frances, 61 years old. So after being handcuffed and drugged from the car and tased, she was obviously they found the gun in the center console. Now, what doesn't tell you in the story is what exactly what item, and this is the things I worry about, what item was she trying to save a dollar on? I mean, are we talking Schwebel's bread? Are we talking ground beef? Are we talking cheese? You know, is this, you know, a dollar off of a can of Pringles? I don't know what she's trying to save the money on. I mean, look, I mean, going to Walmart and bitching out employees and calling them a-holes, sure, vent, do what you got to do. I mean, I'm sure I've probably done that in a drunken stupor, maybe at Walmart once or twice in my life. I mean, going to Walmart and cussing out people, maybe just wandering the lanes and yelling at shit on the shelves. You can do that too if you like. Maybe race up and down the toy section with a cart. Maybe shoot a few hoops in the sporting section. Why not? You might as well. Well, you got to draw the line when you can't save a dollar at Walmart. You just can't, you know, attack the employees at Walmart. Okay, it's just there's a line there. Now, I guess the argument could be made that could the Walmart manager could realize that Mary Frances was this upset over a dollar and maybe said, "You know what, maybe Mary, this time we'll save you a dollar next time, just so you know, you know, you can't use your coupon." You know, maybe do a manager credit or something. But hey, rolling back prices only go so far. Thanks for shopping at Walmart. It also brought me up to a Walmart story of mine. This is back when I lived on the west side of Columbus years ago. And I remember the west side of Columbus, and Mike, you can test this. The Walmart there, the west side of Columbus is an interesting part of town, we'll say. And I love Columbus, don't get me wrong. But I remember going into a Walmart, and the Walmart greeter had her arm in a sling and a black eye. So, you know, I mean, when you're a Walmart greeter, it has a sling and a black eye. Nothing says welcome to Walmart when one of your employees is saying looks like she's been in a street fight with the locals. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. Now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the moment you've all been waiting for, coming to the Revelator Show tonight on Omnis.tv, hails from Ottawa, Canada, the lovely, multi-talented singer, songwriter, musician, Alex Ryder.
Hey, how are you guys? Nice to talk to you, Ryan. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no, thank you for your patience tonight, and thank you for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
This is going to be great. A lot of fun. I'm enjoying your stories.
Yeah, I hope so. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Now, Alex, I want to talk to you about you starting off in music. I'm curious about what your early memories are and early musical influences are.
Actually, you know, I kind of grew up in a family musical household. You know, both of my parents stem from, you know, larger families, and they have a lot of siblings, and they're all very musical, and as my parents are as well. And, you know, they love music. I mean, the only difference was is the genre of music that I was listening to growing up, a lot of Motown, you know, Eagles, you know, a lot of a little bit of everything, but not so much rock, even though that's the genre I chose.
Very interesting. Now, you know, obviously you're talking about that music, but also as a youth, you were a, I guess, table tennis master. I don't know if that's the right word to say or not, but you were recently inducted into 2012 Sports Hall of Fame because of, you know, of your table tennis playing. Talk to me about, you know, that experience and how you got really into that level of table tennis and what an honor it was to be inducted this past year.
You've done your homework. actually, I'm very, very honored to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. You know, when you're seeing your name up in a glass kind of a, you know, case next to Sidney Crosby, it's kind of an overwhelming, kind of surreal feeling. But I got a introduced to table tennis when I was younger. I was always pretty active and really into sports. I was actually into softball, and I thought I was going to be a professional, you know, women's softball player and go to the Olympics for that. But then one of the coaches saw me playing and thought I had a good arm and thought I should try ping pong, which is what most people call it back then. And, you know, when I ended up being competing against somebody who had played it at that kind of level, and I just watched the ball whiz by me, I've always been competitive, and I said, okay, I've got to give this a try. So it's kind of how it all started, and the rest is history. And I just kind of trained and really got into it, and, you know, was very fortunate to have a really good career till a bad knee injury, and you know, just got inducted to the Hall of Fame. So, you know, I'm pretty lucky.
Very cool. It sounds good. And I have to ask you this, you know, is there any trash talking in table tennis? I mean, I know, like, you know, in basketball, I played basketball and football, you know, the guys kind of trash talk back and forth. Is there any trash talking going on between the tables there? Or is there like a certain code or ethic?
Well, there is. It's kind of like, I mean, I'm not going to say I was the John McEnroe of table tennis, because I don't know how people would perceive that. But, you know, there is an etiquette, but at the same time, like any sport, everybody has their moments of frustration. But you know, when you're in different countries traveling around the world, and you could be in China or Japan, and somebody's saying something in Japanese or Chinese, and you don't speak the language, who knows what they're saying to you?
Sure.
You know, I mean, you don't know if they're cursing or swearing at you.
have you ever had any confrontation? Who was your stiffest competition, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, you know, the Chinese, you know, kind of dominated the sport, and the Europeans were kind of very, a really close second. So I spent a lot of time in Asia training and competing there with the Chinese national team. And, you know, I'd have to say they were the stiffest competition and definitely the best by far in the world at the time.
Very nice. Now, with that experience, you know, traveling the world and you know, obviously you're reaching that honor, which is obviously a very high honor to be in any type of Hall of Fame, not only the Sports Hall of Fame. You know, how does that experience transition to you, you know, obviously starting a music career and being in the music industry, also a very, very tough industry and a very tough business. How has that experience helped you?
I think that, you know, for me personally, that because, you know, you have to be disciplined and dedicated and, you know, put in the time, you know, if you want to be the best, that I think that that's really helped with the music business, because, you know, the music business is a difficult business, like you said, and there's going to be a lot of doors slammed in your face and a lot of no's. But I think that if you really want something and you really strive for it and, you know, you work as hard as you possibly can at it, that, you know, I think eventually, you know, you will get some kind of success. And that's how my mentality is with music. So I think that sports definitely, you know, and maybe I'm very competitive and maybe, you know, very strong-minded, maybe not always in a positive sense. I mean, like, I think everything I try to do, I give 200% to, you know, my focus. But I think it's definitely helped for anything that I was going to do after the fact, for sure.
Well, I think that definitely translates because, I mean, listening to your music and, you know, the passion you have in the music, we're going to hear some tracks tonight. I think that definitely translates. I have to ask, when I first heard about your table tennis thing, I can't lie about this now. I really want to come to Ottawa and I want to challenge you in beer pong really bad.
Okay, that's the thing. We'll do it. We'll set it up for sure.
Right on. Now, kind of getting back to the music side of things, Alex. Now, you know, the album Won't You Listen was released. You've gotten really great press. I mean, the songs are great. The songwriting's great. We're going to hear, you know, the first track tonight we're going to hear is My Tears Are Rain. What can you tell me about this particular track as far as, you know, the writing process and kind of the idea lyrically behind it?
Actually, this is one of my favorite songs, and I co-wrote this song with another great talented musician here in Ottawa, Dave Poulin. And, you know, it was one of those songs that just flowed, writing and musically. And, you know, it was more or less written, melody, recorded, background vocals in 3 hours. You know, it was just one of those things that just flowed, and you knew that you had, like, you know, that I felt that I had something that I really liked at the time. So, you know, it's one of my favorites.
Wonderful. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break, Alex. We'll play My Tears Are Rain here on Relevator by Alex Ryder, and we'll come back and talk. Tears of Rain here on Revelator with Alex Ryder, and I'm talking with Alex Ryder right now. Now, Alex, the album Won't You Listen? Now, you worked with a wide range of people on this album. You were traveling back and forth from LA to Canada. Now, you you actually got to meet Ellen DeGeneres and work with producers as well. Nearing the CD's production, you worked with Adam and Alex Anders, who are more famous known for Rock of Ages and Glee. Talk to me about that experience, one with working with those two individuals as producers and meeting Ellen, who sounds, she, you know, I love Ellen, I think she's great.
Actually, Ryan, it was a fantastic experience. I mean, you know, just being in the same room with, you know, Adam and Alex Anders and, you know, knowing what they have done and created and what they've pumped out of Chalice Studios in LA has just, it was just an amazing feeling just to walk into the studio itself. I have to admit, it was a little intimidating walking in there and stepping up to the mic, but, you know, I went there and had the awesome opportunity to put the final touches on Won't You Listen with them and then come back and finish it up here in Ottawa at Eating Crow Records here in Ottawa, which is a great, great company that I work with and a great production team.
Very cool. Now, I'd imagine Ellen always, I mean, always struck me as one of the best female comedians. Was she just a blast to be around? She just kind of seemed that natural to me. It was that kind of how she was in person?
You know what? Like she's great because she's really real, if you know what I mean by that. There's nothing pretentious about her. She's exactly the way that you see her on TV, except, you know, she's on TV. She was very nice. She was like really down to earth. And, you know, I got a tour of the studio and got to meet the guests that were on the show that day. And it was just an awesome experience for sure. Like on Warner Brothers and hanging out there for sure. It was great. And, you know, Ellen was really nice, and I'm glad I had that opportunity as well. I don't think many people get a chance to say they met Ellen.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Now, I want to talk to you about, you know, the writing approach or the songwriting approach and even the producing approach with Adam and Alex. Did you notice like a difference from other people you've worked with as far as their approach or how they structure things for you in the studio? Was there how was the dialogue between them?
You know, considering that, like, I didn't have any, you know, previous relationship with them, you know, it was very, they were very kind and very easy and, you know, it was very easy to work with them and I felt very comfortable right off the bat. And, you know, it's really interesting how you can work on something here and, you know, maybe think that you've kind of finalized your ideas and your sound and then, you know, get to a place like that and work with people like that who are just, you know, I don't know, busting full of ideas and everything, working with the kind of people that they do. And, you know, hearing a couple of the changes that they put on it and thinking, wow, you know, I would never have thought of that or, you know, who would have thought that would work. So it was really great. It was a fantastic process. And like, you know, they don't waste time. They get you in there and they, you know, they know what they want to hear and what they want you to do. And then they do their best to get it out of you.
Awesome. I'm sure it's definitely good to hear a different perspective and a different angle as well, when, especially in the songwriting process, which kind of parlays into my next question that, you know, lyrically, I think you have, you know, pretty, I think, you know, deep, you know, connection with the words in your songs. Now, talk to me, you know, is it more of the words that come first for you, or is it kind of a combination of two when you're co-writing something, or do you do most of the lyrics yourself?
Actually, this EP was a collaboration with a lot of other talented musicians. I did write some, but I also co-wrote some of the stuff. And then some of the songs were written by somebody else, Carrie Blackwell, who you've probably seen on the CD. But, you know, writing is an interesting thing. You know, I personally write lyrics first and then put music to it after. But, you know, ideas can flow and they could come and really easily. And then other times they don't flow as easily. It's kind of like a writer who writes a book. Right, you just kind of, you have to be in a certain headspace and you have to be in a certain mood or state of mind, you know.
No, definitely, I completely understand that as a writer myself. I mean, writing show on, you know, I do some freelance writing, or freestyle writing I should say, on my own. But I want to talk to you also about live shows. I know you had a couple live shows late last month. You have more coming up. Talk to me, what is your favorite part about being live, you know, in front of a live audience?
You know, it's so interesting. I think most people tell me they find it funny because, you know, I love being up on stage and I feel like that's my home. I feel really comfortable up there. I love engaging with the crowd. I don't feel intimidated or nervous at all. But, you know, in real life, I'm kind of quiet and a bit reserved. So a lot of people find that a contradiction, but maybe it's just because when I am up there doing what you love to do and, you know, seeing everybody else loving what you do, it's kind of an awesome feeling, you know? So I've been really fortunate to to be able to play in some really huge and great venues for some great audiences. And, you know, I just love what I do. I think I have a fantastic job.
Very cool. Now, I have to ask, you know, do you have any pre-show rituals? I this question I've been kind of throwing on to a couple artists lately. I'm just curious if there's anything that, you know, the day of the show or any like superstitious things that you do before you go live?
I don't talk. I'm really quiet. I like to laze around for most of the day. I don't know. I don't, you know, I just think about what I want to, you know, do for the show. I kind of do that imagery thing, kind of like sports. And I just kind of maybe think about what I'm going to wear, that kind of thing. But for most part, I just kind of, I'm just really low key, you know, because it's pretty exhausting up there, you know, doing a concert for 2 hours, and it's high energy, and, you know, you're drained when you walk off the stage.
No, I definitely can see that. I remember, you know, watching some of your live clips, you're high energy. You're kind of all over the stage dancing and clapping, and, you know, just vocally, you're very, very strong, very dynamic. Now, what's this? Is there any weird things that have happened to you live? I mean, obviously, being a female musician and of a live crowd, you're probably going to hear certain things that maybe most guys wouldn't hear. Is there anything that sticks out in your mind that you care to share with us tonight?
You know, it's funny, you know, I have been asked that before, but I think up to now, I've been really fortunate that nothing weird, I guess, has really happened, except for, you know, I think happens to every musician is just forgetting the lyrics. But, you know, thank God for your fans, because they know all the lyrics. So they're going to catch you whether you're singing the wrong ones or if you forget, you know, and you just point the mic out at them and they just sing along for you, you know, and it ends up being like a big campfire, kumbaya kind of thing.
Very nice. Now, that's going to be a good feeling, though, that if you happen to forget a lyric or something, the fans are there and are actually know the songs. That's going to be a really good feeling that they know the songs or singing them back to you. That's going to be a really good feeling on stage, I imagine.
Oh, it's an awesome feeling knowing that people are singing, you know, your song. And I think it's more funny that people are like, how can you forget, you know, your own song? You wrote it, you know, you recorded it and you sang it a million times. And, you know, it's true. You know, I don't know the reason why, but, you know, stuff happens, you know, because you'd like to think that you're completely focused up there. But who knows, you know, maybe my boot was loose or, you know, I just didn't think I looked great in those jeans. Who knows? I could have just been preoccupied.
Fair enough. Well, I'm sure no one thought you looked bad in your jeans or anything like that. But from what I know of you, you're a very attractive woman now, which kind of leads me, you know, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way by any means, but it's kind of leads me right into the video, which the next song we're in here tonight, which is Won't You Listen, a video that you recorded. You also wrote with Robert Blackwell and Carrie Blackwell. Talk to me about, you know, writing this or co-writing this song with them and also even, you know, doing the video as well.
Actually, I didn't write the song. It was Robert and Carrie Blackwell. They're brothers and very, very musical and very, very talented. I actually just loved the song when I first heard it and, you know, wanted to record it. And luckily, I was the one that they chose to sing it. But making a video, I have to admit, is hard. There's a lot of like the standing around thing, but, you know, I guess maybe because I'm not an actress, I'm not a model, I'm a singer. So I think the videotapes of the live performances, when you're not paying attention to the cameras, is a lot easier than looking at a camera and, you know, maybe trying to at least get the point of the song or, you know, at least get the emotion across so that people can feel what you're singing when they hear it. You know what I mean?
Sure. No, I understand that.
I actually find it challenging, but, you know, at the same time, fun. And it's a totally different aspect of the world, you know? So, I'm glad I just have the experience, period.
Now, was there like an adjustment period for you as far as like video, like just kind of like that awkward? Because you said, you know, you're kind of shy, obviously, when you're not on stage. Is it like kind of like an awkward phase there until you kind of got comfortable with the people on set and that type of thing? Or,
I think the awkwardness was me, not so much the people that were on set with me, because they were people that I all have worked with and knew. But, you know, I think it's just maybe being a female and being self-conscious and, you know, is this hair in place? Is my lipstick okay? It's just, you know, questioning yourself and double guessing. But, you know, you have to trust the people that you work with, which I do. And, you know, I think that they've done a great job and I'm lucky to have such a great team.
Very nice. Well, it's a really cool video and it's, The title track and the first single off the album, Won't You Listen? This is Alex Rider here on Revelator. Won't you listen?
and get it out. Wanna tell you how I feel, how I feel. Happens every time I try to talk. Know that this just can't be real. Won't you listen? I tried to tell you I love you, but you say that it's over. Won't you listen? I tried to tell you I love you, but you say that it's over. It's over. Just your way of killing me. Least thing you can do and say is that you love me yesterday. Cause I don't care about tonight. What's tomorrow? Won't you listen? I tried to tell you.
That is Alex Rider and Won't You Listen, which is also the title of Alex's album as well. And we still have Alex Rider hanging out with us tonight. And, you know, the album's out. You've been hitting the radio circuit pretty hard. And I'm kind of curious about what your short-term and really your long-term goals are musically.
Well, actually, I'd like to say thank you to, you know, stations like you and people like you for your interest and for all indie radio stations who are playing it. I'm so happy that it's being well received, and, you know, I'm enjoying all the interviews and getting to meet people like you guys, Ryan and Mike. So it's a lot of fun. But, you know, I my short term and long term goals are, I think, are more or less the same. I want to keep creating music, writing music, recording music, and I want to be performing it. So, you know, that's what I love to do. That's my passion. And as long as the fans like what I'm doing, I'm going to continue to do it if they want me to. So that's my goals, whether it's tomorrow or, you know, 2 months from now or 2 years from now.
Very, very well said. Now, what do you perceive your biggest challenges are moving forward? in the music industry as a whole?
Well, you know, there's, I look at the music industry, you know, it's more of a challenge. I think, like, you know, it's been more of a challenge for me and, you know, me trying to do my best at something. But, you know, the music business is difficult and there is so much talent out there, you know, and that just can't be taken away. And there's talent behind you. There's talent, you know, ahead of you. And, you know, you're trying to break through, especially being a new artist. So you just... You know, you just really hope that people, like I said, perceive you well, like what you're doing. And I think that when you have a great fan base, true fans, I think that, you know, you'll get somewhere. And it all depends what you think fame or success is, you know, and everybody has a different definition. And I think that if I can do my passion and my dream full time as a job, then I think you succeeded. It doesn't have to be at a certain level that maybe other people think success is.
Again, very well said. I'll tell you what, those couple heavy questions coming out of the break here. I want to play, I kind of mentioned this to you on Twitter, play a little word game. This is the first time we've done this, something we're going to try to do with all orders coming through. And you're kind of our guinea pig, so we appreciate you being our guinea pig tonight. It's going to be a word game. I'm going to give you a name of a famous person, and you just kind of tell me what comes to mind to that name. Is that cool?
Okay.
All right. First name we have tonight is Joan Jett.
A female rock icon? Hot? Can I say more than one word?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, whatever you want to say about it. It's fine. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Leather.
Very nice. Now, the next one I have, and I know you're a sci-fi fan, so I'm going to bring this one out. That is William Shatner.
Captain Kirk? I mean, come on. Captain Kirk? I mean, who doesn't know who Captain Kirk is?
Probably the teenagers who just know them from the Priceline commercials.
But now they got the new Star Trek out, right? So I mean it's pretty good, you know, with Christopher Pine. So I mean, like, you know, I think that you still know who Captain Kirk is.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, Captain Kirk is like the first space badass, you know. So
yeah.
The third name I have for you, Alex, is Bruce Willis.
Die Hard 51. I don't know how many of those were there. Demi Moore. I don't know. I mean, I think he's a fantastic actor, but when I just think of Bruce Willis, I think of either, you know, I Can See Dead People or Die Hard.
Well, no, that was Mel Gibson, Lethal Weapon. I'm sorry. No, Bruce Willis, yeah. Die Hard with a Vengeance. That was on the other day, and I was like, I just kept saying it, Die Hard with a Vengeance. You know, you just have to, like, pump your fist when you say it. It makes you feel real good, you know? But, yeah. All right, well, I appreciate you playing our silly little game with us. Now, I also, like I said, I know you're a movie buff. What is your five top favorite movies?
Oh, Ryan, that's tough when you're a movie buff. And, you know, since I know that you are too, you can't tell me that's not a hard question.
That's a tough one, I know.
There's more than five. you know what? I am a huge Underworld fan with Kate Beckinsale.
Nice. Very nice.
I don't know if you like those kind of movies, but
I love the Underworld movies. The first, the last one I wasn't too hip on, to be honest with you, but the first three I love.
Yeah. And I just want the outfit, to tell you the truth. I mean, you know, a set of vampire teeth and her leather outfit, and I would be happy.
Yes, but you should be in the fifth one.
Oh, thank you. That would be so cool. Yeah, then it would be like, what, Twilight number, you know, 15? I mean, it's too many. My
Twilight,
other favorite,
shiny vampires that don't bite people.
Is the Rush Hour series with Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan. I love the two of them together.
Very, very cool.
And then I'd have to say Barbershop. With
Cedric
the Entertainer,
Ice Cube, right?
And,
yeah.
So those, but there's more than one like movie, like there's like one or two of each. So that's probably more than five, but those are my top faves for sure.
Awesome. Very cool. Very good mix there with Ice Cube, some comedy. And obviously, I'm with you on the Underworld movies. I really dig those. And, so cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Now, Alex, it's been a pleasure talking with you tonight. We really appreciate it. If people are interested in it, I'm sure they're going to be, to find out more about you, more about your music, how to get the CD, which is titled Won't You Listen, which is a great CD, and thank you for sending it to me. I really appreciate it. It's very, very kind of you. How can people get a hold of you if they want to find more about what you're up to musically?
You could check me out at alexweider.com, and there is links everywhere there that you can check out pics and videos and links to iTunes, CD Baby. You can hit me up on Facebook on my music page, Reverb Nation. And, you know, I would just like, if you don't mind, Ryan, to say thank you to, you know, the Alex Weider team and to McGowan Clothing for their sponsorship. And I got some pretty cool clothes going on there, and they're from France. And, like, you know, I just want to thank everybody for everything. And, you know, please check it out, take a listen, download, and let me know what you think. Tweet me at AlexRider01, you know, drop me a line, and let's stay in touch.
Wonderful. Well, Alex, the last song we have tonight is You Can't Hurt Me Anymore. Is there anything we didn't know about this song before we exit tonight?
Do you think the title says it all, though, Ryan?
I was trying to see if I could draw a little more out of you. I know the title really does kind of speak for itself, but I was hoping maybe I could draw a little more out of here.
Actually, you know, this, you know, a lot of people, I think, you know, want to know where your inspiration comes for writing, and I think that, you know, most writers and musicians, you know, obviously base it, you know, on either, you know, their own emotions or experiences, other people's experiences and life experiences, or, you know, something that they've seen or heard of. And, you know, I think that when you hear this song, if you listen to the lyrics, I think, you know, why don't you tell me what you actually think, if it's what it's based on. But I think it speaks for itself.
No, I think you're right. I was just hoping maybe we get a little something more out of you there. But hey, Alex, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and I'm glad we finally got to talk and do this. And definitely keep in touch. You're really good people, and we appreciate you taking the time out for us.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and thank you for having me on. It's been a blast, and I'm very appreciative for you, you know, playing my music and for the positive feedback. So thank you guys so much.
Wonderful. Here it is. You Can't Hurt Me Anymore, Alex Weider, here on Revelator.
pain. No, I'll never be the same, but I won't ever cry those tears again. Yeah, you can't love me anymore. I'm finding out who I am. Yes, you really crossed the line, but I left the pain behind. You can't hurt me.
That is You Can't Hurt Me Anymore here on Revelator with Alex Rider. And special, again, thanks to Alex Rider for coming on the show tonight. If you want to find out more about Alex Rider, please visit omnes.tv. That's omnes.tv. And click on Revelator, Episode 2. And we'll have a little bio for Alex Rider as well. Click on Revelator, Episode 1. Excuse me. But moving on tonight, let's talk some NBA basketball. Heading into the really kind of the home stretch of the NBA season, we'll look at the Eastern Conference standings and standing head and shoulders above everybody, not just in the East, but in the NBA in general, winning 15 in a row. And they're not just winning games. I mean, they are flat out destroying teams by 10, 15, 20 points. That is the Miami Heat at 44-14, winning 15 in a row. LeBron James is on his way to winning another MVP and looks like another title. The East is a mess. Yeah, Milwaukee, Boston, Atlanta, Brooklyn, Chicago. None of those teams are very, very good. Let's face it. Indiana is the only team that maybe has a shot, but can they beat Miami 4 times out of 7? Very, very unlikely. Now, the Western Conference is where all the excitement is in the NBA right now. You have the Lakers coming up from the 10th spot now in the 9th spot. Now only really a game and a half out of Utah, who's really, really struggled. You have Houston and Golden State, another team who's riddled by injuries and struggling. All of a sudden, you're looking at the Lakers sneaking into the playoffs. Now, they want to try to avoid that. They would like to get into the seven seed, probably even the 6 seed. It's going to be hard to get up that high. So that way, which would set up a matchup with Clippers versus Lakers in the first round, which I would love to see, by the way. But it looks like they don't want to get stuck playing Oklahoma City, who they're playing this week in San Antonio. Obviously, it's just not a good matchup for them. So it'll be interesting to see how that West plays out. And Memphis, Clippers, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, those are the top four in the West. And it looks like that's going to stay that way. It's just a matter of what the bottom four are going to look like. Key notes in the NBA right now. Tony Parker of the San Antonio Spurs is going to be out 4 weeks with an ankle injury. Again, the Lakers have won 7 out of the last 10. Again, as I alluded to, the Jazz and the Warriors are definitely slipping despite Stephon Curry's 54 points at Madison Square Garden last week. And the Knicks struggling, losing ground on the number two seed, now the number 3 seed. Not a good matchup for them. Looks like they'll be playing Atlanta in the first round of the playoffs to start today. Still a lot of basketball to go, so we'll see. And the Bulls holding in that 4th seed in the East. Tell you what, if Derrick Rose comes back, all bets are off in the East because you don't know what the hell, you don't know what Derrick Rose you're going to get coming off that knee injury. You don't know if you're going to get MVP caliber Derrick Rose or you're going to get a hobbled Derrick Rose. It remains to be seen. And Philadelphia, the 76ers are in free fall, not even in the playoff picture anymore. They traded I'd be calling Andrew Bynum Snuffleupagus. Okay, they gave up talented draft picks. Andre Iguodala, they took on salary. This guy hasn't played a single minute this season. And with 25 games left to go, I don't see Philadelphia making a run at the playoffs at all. Now, let's take a look at the movies at the box office this past week like we always do. Starting with number 10, working our way up to number 1. It is Dark Skies at $3.4 million. A Good Day to Die Hard at $4.5 million. Silver Lining Playbook at $5.7 million. Safe Haven at $6.3 million. Escape from the Planet Earth at $6.6 million. The Last Exorcism Part 2. I love the title of that. It's The Last Exorcism Part 2. $7.7 million. The movie Snitch, the rock film, which I saw 2 weeks ago. That's a very, very good film. $7.7 million. 21 and Over, $8.7 million. Identity Theft at $9.7 million. And the big winner this week at the box office was Jack the Giant Slayer at $27.2 million at the box office. And what can you say? It looks like a very, very solid film. You go see it in 3D, I guess, if you want to as well. That's really breaking in a lot of money. I'm interested to see where they go a week out into next week. But again, thanks to Alex Rider. Thanks to Mike doing a wonderful job as always. And I hope you enjoyed the very first episode of Revelator here on Omnis.tv. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so.
This was Episode 1, Table Tennis Trash Talk. For show notes or links to the topics discussed on this episode of Revelator, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to Omnis.tv, that's O-M-N-E-S.tv, and click on Revelator. Thanks for listening.